2,000 years ago, a little over 2,000 years ago, one man died and it changed the world forever. Jesus Christ died. And those that had been following him had wondered if there was a possibility of a resurrection. When Jesus arrived, he didn't proclaim himself as a great teacher. He didn't say, I'm going to teach all these wonderful things and it'll change your life. He was very clear, I'm not a teacher, I'm a savior. And it won't be because of teaching your life has changed. It'll be because you have a relationship with me. It's the big idea this weekend. You can write in your notes, the entire story of Jesus hinges on the resurrection. And the people that were following him, they would have been wondering as the story began to circulate on the very first Easter like today, could it be true? I'm Robin, welcome to East Lake Church. We call this a church for everyone because it is. And on that day, everyone would have been wondering, what should we think about Jesus? Because only 2 years earlier, two days earlier, they had seen him die. They saw him on the cross, the crucifixion, which would have been a very compelling, convincing form of death for Jesus. You don't walk away from that one. Israel is occupied by Rome, and they had perfected the crucifixion. They used it as a way to strike terror into the nations they occupied. It was brutal, and it was public, and it was extremely final. When you saw someone die on the cross, you knew they're dead. So they're wondering. It's even like Jesus said it himself. You can see in your notes later, knowing that everything had now been finished, Jesus said, it is finished. With that, he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. And they're all watching. It's finished. How could it be finished? I was banking on Jesus. I was banking on him to be the one that could forgive me of my sins. I was banking on his grace. I was banking on him to be the one that could give me hope. And maybe you have come in here today, you've had a time in your life where it just seems like the rug has been pulled out. You were banking on a job and it didn't come together. You're banking on a relationship, everything, just banking on it, and the relationship explodes. You're banking on something with your children or your parents, you're just a friend, you're just banking on it, and it doesn't happen. And what do I do now? Where are you now? So the resurrection, everything hinged on that. As they got to their first season, the story starts to circulate. He's risen. They're saying, but 2 days ago, I saw him die. Have you ever had anything and your heart tells you, it can't be true, it can't be true, but your eyes say, it is true. You go online, you look at your bank account, your heart says, it can't be true, and you look at the bank, it is true. Three different types of people I want to talk about today. They kind of represent three different groups of people, and they were banking on something with Jesus to have a relationship. Write in your notes, number one, Jesus gives me forgiveness from my past mistakes. This guy's name is Simon Peter. His friends call him Peter. Just an average guy, grows up in a regular family, went to church every Sunday, and he gets into his teen years, and he starts to fade. I don't know for sure if I believe everything they're telling me in church. And he fades and he fades. And he gets to that age where he can bolt. And he's gone. Whole different type of life now. Exciting type of life. Throw off all the constraints. Peter's out and about. And by his own admission, he steps over some lines in his life. He now has some regrets. And maybe you know someone like that, or maybe that was you, or you know, you just bolted, and then before you know it, you're sort of past where you thought you would ever go. He's the type of person that is ingenuous, and he has some trouble telling the truth, and yet he's kind of crafty, and he's a hard-working guy, and he lives by this huge freshwater lake. And he gets this idea to start a little fishing business. And so, he gets a boat, and he starts this little business, and he starts to grow up a little bit, and, you know, he's doing a little bit better. He's being more responsible, and his business starts to grow. And then he gets one of his buddies to join in with him as well. and the business starts to grow. And pretty soon, Peter, this guy, Simon Peter, he has a thriving little business going, this little fishing business. And he starts to have some employees. And now he gets married and he has some children and some things have changed for him. And that's when he meets Jesus. And I want you to look in your notes what the first thing he says. He had a brother named Andrew, and Andrew had seen Jesus giving some lectures, and he goes to Peter. He says, "Peter, I've never heard anybody say the type of stuff that Jesus says about God. I've never met anybody that seems like they know God that well." And so he arranges a meeting, and Jesus approaches Peter. Look what Peter says to Jesus when he meets him. "When Simon Peter saw what had happened, he bowed down before Jesus. 'Go away from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man.'" He pushes him away. Peter has some things that have happened in his life, and he regrets them, and he sees God, and he says, Peter and his past and Jesus cannot be in the same room together. And maybe you've felt that way before. You want to approach God, you maybe want to go back, and have you noticed that, this is something I've noticed, you have some regrets in your past, who you used to be, and then you sort of change and you become responsible and you're done sowing your wild oats and you just change. You become different and you don't make the same choices anymore, and time goes by and you're just a completely different person, and you wonder this: I'm completely different now. Why doesn't that erase the guilt of who I was then? Because when Peter meets Jesus, he's a whole different person. And yet he notices, he's restless. He goes, "I still feel guilty for the stuff that I used to do." And when he approaches Jesus, he says, "Go away from me. We can't be together. You don't want to be close to me, Jesus, because of all the things that I've done." You know anybody like that? And Jesus does the most remarkable thing. He says, "Peter, not only do I forgive you, I want to be close friends with you." And for the first time, Peter feels free from his past. I know I've had people that have heard different things about my past, and we don't know what Peter did, by the way. The Bible never tells us what he did. If we heard what Peter did, we might say, "That's not so bad. Hear my story, and it really doesn't matter, because wherever we draw our line when we go over it, that's when the regrets begin to flood in. And Peter recognizes, "I've changed everything about my life, and it doesn't take away the guilt that comes from way back then." And I'm sure he's tried the same things that we've tried before. Have you ever had anybody come up to you and they tell you, "Stop beating yourself up. You're too hard on yourself." And with all of your might, you want to believe it. You want it to make something different to set you free, and it doesn't. Or someone else comes up to you and they say, "Listen, you're forgiven. You know, you're just being too hard on yourself, and you really want to believe it, and yet it doesn't set you free." And Peter, for the first time, hears someone say, "You're forgiven," and it sets him free. Guilt is kind of like having an eyelash in your eye. You know, you get up in the morning, you have an eyelash in your eye, and there's no tricking or saying you don't. It's like, "I have an eyelash in my eye," and you can put water in it, or your wife can help you get it out, and "I think it's gone," you know, and then you walk away, and if the eyelash is still in your eye, you know it's in your eye, it's bothering you. You don't fake it the rest of the day, you know, I don't feel it, I don't have an eyelash in my eye. You know it's there, or it's not there. And that's how guilt is. And probably lots of people have told Peter, and people have told me, and they've told you, "Don't feel guilty about it," but it doesn't matter. And Jesus is the only one that's ever had the power. When he said, "You're forgiven," Peter didn't feel the eyelash anymore. And then he watches Jesus die on the cross, and he's thinking, "Who's going to forgive me now? Who's going to be able to say it in a way that really sets me?" Because you could tell yourself, and someone else could tell you, and your best friend, your mom, your uncle, your brother, they could say you're forgiven, but if the eyelash is there, you know it. But when Jesus said it to Peter, he's like, "I do feel free." Do you need to be forgiven? Maybe you're like Peter, you've changed tons of stuff. You're not even the same person you used to be. But being a different person has not erased the guilt. And that's Peter. Now, person number two, right in your notes, Jesus gives me a grace instead of a grade. And don't we tend to reduce all of life down to a report card? I have a report card on how good a dad I am, or how good of an employee I am. I have a report card on how good of a husband I am. I have a report card on how good of a son or brother, or whatever it is. You know, I get my report card. When I was a freshman in high school, I didn't like school, and I got lazy, and I didn't do my work at school, and I didn't do my homework either. And when their first report card came out, I got three Fs. I had three Fs. I'm riding the school bus home, and I'm looking at my report card, and I have three Fs on my report card, and I'm thinking, oh, man, I am in a lot of trouble. And then I noticed that the Fs were written on my report card with ordinary ballpoint ink, and they looked like they could be changed into a B. So I got out a pen, and I changed three Fs to three Bs. And I came into my house, and I set that report card on the table, and they came out and looked at it, and I didn't get any trouble. In fact, they said, keep up the good work. It's fantastic. So the next report card came out, and it was the same thing. It was written in ink, but the previous grades had been typed in, and they were the Fs. And I was caught. A young man approaches Jesus, and he's been boiling everything down to report cards, especially when it comes to God. He comes to Jesus, and he says, how good do my grades have to be to have a relationship with God? Listen to what he says to Jesus. A man came to Jesus and asked, Teacher, what good thing must I do to have eternal life? How good of grades do I have to have, Jesus? If I'm going to be close to God, if God's going to care about me, if we're going to have a relationship, how good do my grades have to be for that to occur? And they have this really interesting dialogue. I'm going to read it to you out of the Bible. It's not in your notes, but you can follow along on the screen. Jesus answered, you must not murder anyone. You must not commit adultery. You must not steal. You must not tell lies about others. You must respect your father and your mother and love your neighbor the same as you love yourself. The young man said, I've obeyed all those commands. What else do I need? I think he's been changing some grades because I doubt you could get like every single one of those perfect. You know, when you live a life of legalism, you have two choices. You either change your grades all the time or you quit. Because nobody's perfect. Nobody doesn't ever tell any lies or disrespect their parents. Oh, you might get the murder one down, but the rest of them? And he knows that. Do you know when I changed my grades from the F to the B and didn't get in any trouble, I didn't all of a sudden feel like I was a great student. I knew who I was. And when you change the grades in life, you know who you are. It's like this young man comes up to Jesus and says, I've been trying to get the type of grades that I need to be with God, and I'm changing them all the time, and it's not working. I can't maintain the grades. And it's interesting that his disciples are listening to this discussion and out of the Bible, listen to what they say. The followers were amazed to hear this. They asked, then who can be saved? Jesus looked at them and said, this is something that people cannot do, but God can. Boy, and that's a wonderful statement. What are you going through right now, and there's no way you're going to pull it off? And can you hear the Bible say, but God can. I'm never going to be able to get this marriage on track, but God can. I'm never going to be able to be the kind of dad I want to be, but God can. I'm never going to get these finances under control, but God can. I'm never, ever going to be able to have a relationship with my parents that I've always, but God can. And it's almost like Jesus says to this young man, he said, would you be willing to stop trying to be perfect? Because it's not based on grades, it's based on grace. You're accepted by the grace of God, not your grades. So he's really banking on Jesus, and when he would have seen Jesus die on the cross and anybody like him, they would have been, oh no, not back to the report card. I can't live that way anymore. I was banking on the grace of God. It can't be finished. Don't let it be finished. Don't say that. Now the third person, and her name is Martha. And right in your notes, Jesus gives me hope for the future. Martha comes from a large family, and Jesus would often go there for dinner and hang out with everyone. He was very close with Martha's brother, Lazarus. And so Martha meets Jesus through Lazarus. And Martha, she has trouble letting go. Martha has a lot of trouble being positive about the future. Martha's always trying to make sure that she can, you know, kind of get everything, all her ducks in a row, everything in line, keep everything together so I can feel okay about life. And it's just tearing her apart. Are you a control freak? Or just a little freaky? You really do, like, if I could just control everything. And sometimes it seems like it's working, and you're on the inside, you know that it's tearing you apart. On the inside, you know you're just about ready to not be able to go forward. Always trying to control. And sometimes it seems like you have control, and then you lose control. And Martha, is when she meets Jesus, she's pretty desperate. And Jesus is pretty straightforward with Martha. He says to Martha, Martha, here's my offer. If you give me control, I'll give you hope. And she takes him up on it. Okay, Lord. And everything immediately is different. It's like for the first time she sleeps through the night. I don't know if you've ever struggled with anxiety. I don't mean just the normal everyday fears that we all go through, but when the fear shows up and you're not even sure why it's there. I remember times in my life that I would be in my bed at night and I didn't even know why I was afraid. And I couldn't get it to go away. And the anxiety would just be so compelling, and I would try to track it down and why am I so scared? What happened? And I just couldn't even find it. It was like it had its own life inside me. And all of a sudden for Martha, that was gone. So can you imagine when she sees Jesus die on the cross, she's thinking, am I going back there? I mean, Jesus, you told me to put hope in you. She'd been through it once before. Her brother Lazarus had gotten really super sick, and she had called for Jesus, and he arrives after Lazarus dies. And she learns a lesson that is the lesson we all learn when it comes to having a relationship with Jesus. That when I decide to believe that Jesus cares about me, then my hope is not in my circumstances, it's in Him. Listen when she says, Lazarus is now dead, her brother, and Martha's been kind of flipping out a little bit, and then she sees Jesus and she runs up. Listen to what she says to him. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you anything you ask. Now here's the lesson that Martha brings. She believes Jesus cares about her. And when you believe Jesus cares about you, your hope is not tied in circumstances. It's tied in Him. And she's going through the thing that all people go through. It was great. It was awesome. Everything's changed in my life. And then she hits a speed bump. And she has to decide. Do I believe Jesus cares about me? There's this awesome story about this pastor and teacher in Taiwan, third generation Christian. And his grandfather was a Taoist priest, no Christians in his family at all. And he talks about how his grandfather eventually became Christian, influenced the family. It's a really neat story, but I wanted to read to you just the little first part of it, how it got started. Let me tell you this. So this is him talking now, this pastor, this teacher. He says, "My grandfather was a Taoist priest. He was doing well in the secular world. But there was something restless, something very uncomfortable in his heart. I suppose you can say that he was crying out in desperation, 'Who cares about me?' He told me that he discovered that he met the one who cared even for him." See, Martha believed Jesus cares about me. And that's why I have hope. It's not tied to my circumstances anymore. It doesn't matter what my circumstances are. Even when it's as heart-rending as someone in my family dying, or I lost my job, or I've been through a divorce, or the engagement didn't work out, or I went bankrupt, or whatever. I know Jesus cares about me. And so when she's seeing Jesus say it's finished, dying on the cross, she's wondering, what am I supposed to do now? Who's going to care about me in a way that I know I'll always have hope for the future? And then the story starts to circulate. It was on a Sunday, just like now. Jesus isn't dead. Some people claim to see him. And everything hinged on it. Because if Jesus is alive, then someone can forgive me and set me free. They can say it and it'll work. If Jesus is alive, no more report cards for me. I live by God's grace. If Jesus is alive, and I know he cares about me, I'll always have hope. And they're wondering, and maybe you're here today, you're wondering, should I not? They're wondering, could it be true? Could it be alive? Everything hinges on it. And I think it's kind of ironic that some women were the first to discover it. I think it was great that the men had to trust the women at the very beginning. And the women run to the tomb. They're going to prepare Jesus with some spices for his burial. Listen what happens. The bottom line, the resurrection means relationship. Listen to the story. "Then the angel spoke to the women. 'Don't be afraid,' he said. 'I know you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He isn't here. He's risen from the dead, just as he said would happen. Come, see where his body was lying. And now go quickly and tell his disciples, he's risen from the dead.'" On the very first Easter, the women come storming back, and you know how men can be when women start talking. Yeah, you know, they're not listening. And they're like, "You don't understand. We were at the tomb. We looked inside. He's not there. An angel came and told us he's risen." I'm sure Martha and Peter and this young man thought, maybe I don't have to give up everything I thought I had lost when he died on the cross. Maybe I can have it all. And I hope you're thinking, if he is resurrected, maybe I could have someone that would forgive my past. It would work. Maybe I could receive God's grace. Quit checking and changing my grades. Maybe he does care about me. I don't have to be afraid and stressed out and have anxiety. Maybe my hope could be tied to him.